You're listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, your daily podcast on the Denver Nuggets. Now, here is your host from DenverStiffs.com, Adam Mottis.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to the Locked On Nuggets podcast, part of Locked On NBA Network. I'm your host, Adam Mottis from DenverStiffs.com, the largest Denver Nuggets blog and community on the web. Check us out and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Today, I am kicking off a brand new series of shows leading up right to training camp where I sit down with an expert on all of the teams fighting to get into the playoffs that will be competing for a playoff spot with the Denver Nuggets. And I'm starting it off with the boss man himself, the radio voice of the Jazz and the host of Locked On Jazz. It's David Locke. David, how are you doing?
I've read your Twitter followers. I am not an expert, according to many of your listeners. I am a simple homer that is absolutely worth nothing.
Yeah, well, I don't even think that's the biggest complaint. I could have introduced you as the voice of many of our commercials, and then the pitchforks really would have come out.
Yeah, I haven't done those in a while, though. Like, you put me off of that.
I think fans are so funny, and my fans, thankfully, very protective of me, and so anytime
and
I have
just every time someone listens to a commercial, just remind yourself, this means I get it for free.
That's right. That's absolutely right. And also
every time,
and I always, of course, appreciate it because it means money for me, which is also great. But to get into this, you know, the Jazz. We're going to talk about some of the spots and where we have everybody falling, but the Jazz, I think, are really, really good. And I almost did not include them in this series because I'm not sure that they are one of the teams that is competing with Denver for a playoff spot. I kind of put them, the Golden State and Houston are in a different tier. Utah might also be in a different tier than the rest of the teams out west, including the Lakers and Thunder. So that's what makes them interesting. But actually, before we get there, I want to start. I kind of have a structure I want to go with here, and I'm going to start with just what are some of the key additions and subtractions to this Utah team this season compared to last.
So, you know, to your first kind of point in there, on the Northwest Division preview that you and I did on Real GM, you guys actually kind of talked me into it a little bit, and then had me go back and do a bunch of research after the show. If I remember my timeline correctly, and I actually found the same thing. Like, it was interesting. You guys talked me into the Jazz, which is my own team, and then I went and did some research to try to refute it and found the opposite.
Right.
So I'm pretty bullish, which is not – I know it's probably weird for your listeners who think I'm too pro-Utah, but I'm actually not usually bullish on my own team. I'm kind of one of those natural cynics.
So we talked you into it. I liked it. Everybody says you're a homer, but we're the ones that made you a homer. I like it.
Yeah, you actually totally talked me into it as the show went on. It was really an interesting experience. So the Jazz made two changes at the trade deadline that are the biggest additions to this team. And that is the Joe Johnson move to Houston or Sacramento through trade to Houston. And the Rodney Hood. Rodney's a great kid, and he's gotten a bad rap. And, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to Donovan yesterday, and Donovan Mitchell, and Donovan went out of his way to kind of say, you remember when I first came in, Rodney, like, for all the bad talk Rodney's getting and how disengaged he was by the end of the year, like, Rodney was the one who took me under his wing because I had watched – Donovan and Grayson that day in open gym and how much they were interacting. And so I asked him about it and he goes, you know, everybody's forgotten that Rodney was the one that took me under his wing and helped me out so much. And so I'm trying to do the same to Grayson. He goes, that's just the right thing to do.
Kenneth Faried, by the way, had this in Denver where, you know, his reputation, I don't know what happened behind the scenes. I'm sure there was some dysfunction, but as far as the players, I think he played the role of a vet very, very well in terms of just showing the ropes to guys.
I think there's an interesting Hey, by the way, it's taken us like 2 minutes to get on a sidetrack. This is why you and I should just like do a show together once a week.
For sure.
There is a difference in this league between leadership to other players and leadership for the team.
Yeah.
So when people talk about veteran leadership, always the team talking about it. And I actually think it almost never exists. I watched a veteran player with a young player for an entire year tell him all the things that were important for his career, and none of them were good for the Utah Jazz. But all of them were good for the player.
Yeah, I think that's right on the nose, I think, even with Kenneth Faried.
And so you can have a player who's being great to his teammates and helping his player because of that camaraderie and demanding a trade at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think there's a, you have to understand that separation between the two. Yeah. So, that's my thought. All right. So the Jazz moved Rodney Hood, who by the end was disengaged. His defensive rating was 107, which is really hard to fathom considering he played for the Utah Jazz.
He was that, that plus minus outlier for the Jazz, right? Right. Every time you put him on, everybody was worse.
So Joe Johnson was a minus eight when he was on the floor last year. Joe was, it's just kind of came to an end, I think.
Yeah.
So you suddenly take those two off the floor and you get this incredible second half of the year explosion. What's interesting, to me at least, you go to the first half of the season and take those two off the floor, and the numbers are the exact same as what the Jazz were in the second half of the season.
So it makes it, it gives evidence that it wasn't just a hot run, but maybe that they trimmed the fat and just became a little bit leaner and better. And the guys that replaced fit a lot better to what they replaced them with fit a lot better.
And that's what happened after we did the Real GM show with Danny, is I went to go look at that number to try to refute saying, you know what, it was just an end of the year surge. The biggest mistake you can make in this league is take the final 25 games of a team and think that it translates to the next year. Players are injured, teams aren't engaged. It's, you know, we played the Warriors and Quinton Cook started in the backcourt with somebody I don't even remember, right? Like, yeah. You can't judge that. And then when I found that the Jazz were, if you took those two guys off, that the guys were that good, then it suddenly changed my perspective a little bit that maybe this actually has been there and going on the whole year. So I think when you ask that, I think it's so that's the biggest thing. And then there's two subtle ones. So Tabo Cephalosha and Jay Crowder have never been healthy at the same time. Cause Tabo's out for the year when they acquired Jay.
Right.
And I actually really think Grayson Allen's going to be good.
Man, I can't get on board that take. We've talked about this, but that's another one I'll have to wait to see it before I believe it. I mean, he is older, so maybe he hits the ground running a little bit, and that he will have, I think, a little bit more of a narrow focused role, and rookies, the more narrow their role is, the better they do. But I don't know. We'll just have to see. Plus, Utah has, you go through the roster, they got 10 guys that they're not a weakness when you throw them on the court. So they already have just this full rotation of guys that I think are pretty good. Is there a weakness from last season that you don't think has been addressed yet?
I mean, I think the question all last year was whether they could score enough.
Yeah.
And I think that's still probably a legitimate discussion, that you're trying to score with Favors and Gobert on the floor at the same time. That's not easy. Mm. In fact, all of the numbers show that the Jazz score better when Rudy's on with anybody but Derek. Frankly, as dominant as the Jazz are with Rudy and Derek, they're often better without Rudy and Derek. They're dominant with them. They're like plus eight over the last 2 years. But they have actually been almost better with Rudy and anyone else. So I think offensively, you know, Donovan has still got an incredible load. They were 15th in the league offensively. And I, you know, Dante Exum coming back from injury, I'm not sure I really think that changes who they are offensively. I think he makes them maybe even better defensively. You could probably be nervous that Joe Ingles shooting, which has gone on for 2.5 years.
Yeah, I'm not nervous about that at all.
Right? Like, so I'm not sure why you're going to say that, right? Like, I'm trying.
But what about this one? I mean, Donovan Mitchell was so good last year. I know the raw numbers were not as good as maybe some of just the fourth quarter big moments and stuff. But is there any chance in your mind that he actually stagnates in year two? That maybe he was a little bit above, you know, playing above himself last year, and this year, you know, it's just a little bit of a flat line.
There's certainly a chance. There is nobody else in the history of the game who has matched the numbers that he matched in his rookie year.
Yeah.
And at his age that then did that.
I think,
right?
Nuggets fans are only hoping for this. I mean,
right? I mean, when you start to look at the players who he was similar to in his rookie year, you know, the only one that actually I would say that's the only player comp on him from a rookie year where you see a little difference is that Tyreke Evans got less good in his second year.
Right. Yeah. I guess he is one of the big examples.
So he's really the only, he went from an effect, his effective field goal percentage was 47 and went down to 43, got pretty terrible. And he went from 20 points a game to 17. Now, for all of, you know, I'm not sure that Tyreek Evans watched all 82 games and then watched pre-selected videos of Dwayne Wade, Kobe Bryant in year increments of their career last in the offseason. Like, I think there's a different beast here. The other one that's worth pointing out is for all of the discussion of Donovan's inefficiencies, which I've heard a lot of in the offseason, like, oh, it was a high volume shoot. So his effective field goal percentage was 50.6. So that's above league average.
Yeah.
And he averaged 20 points a game. When you go play this game and try to find an NBA rookie who had an effective field goal percentage over 50 and scored 20 points a game, you're into some rarefied air.
Yeah, I guess to that, even to that next, to that point, then, so do you see him making a leap this year? Yes. Are there any other players that you think may, or what players?
Way, can I give you the players that scored 20 points a game and had an effective field goal percentage of?
Oh God, I'm ready for the list. This is, I mean, you have to understand this is painful for Nuggets fans. I think a lot of people are hitting, they're mashing the fast forward button here because they don't want to hear it. But yeah, let me hear the list.
So Blake Griffin was 50.8, Duncan, Shaq, Alonzo Mourning, David Robinson. They're all bigs.
Wow.
The last guard to do it was 84-85. His name's Michael Jordan. Akeem Olajuwon, Ralph Sampson, Terry Cummings.
Okay.
Bill Cartwright, 1977-78, somebody did it. Any guess?
77-78.
Nope. Nugget?
Alex English?
Walter Davis.
Walter Davis. Ah.
Averaged 24 as a rookie with an effective field goal percentage of 53. Adrian Dantley and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So I just don't, right? Like,
yeah,
you know, rookies who scored 25 points a game as many times as he did, only 9 of them have done in the last 30 years. Carmelo and Blake were the other guys who did it. He averaged 11.8 points per game in the second half of games. The only rookies to do that since 2002, 2003 are LeBron, Durant, and Lillard. Like, there's not a big,
let me ask
20
you this,
points
let me,
a game as a rookie, Tyreek's the only one.
Let me ask you this then. Is this his team?
It's both he and Rudy's team.
Yeah.
You know, Nugget fans probably don't know this story. So the Jazz are terrible last year, and Rudy sends out a tweet that says, we'll be okay.
Okay.
And they're like 8 games under 500, and Rudy sends out this tweet that says, we'll be fine. And it's a really big signature moment in the franchise. Like, Rudy was injured. He wasn't on the sideline saying, my guys suck. Why can't they win without me? He just sent out a tweet. We'll be fine. I don't remember exactly what it was, but, and it's kind of this, like, he has, you know, Rudy's a 20, sorry, I know this isn't great for Nugget fans either. you know, Rudy's a 27th pick of a draft who came in the league and announced that he was going to be the defensive player of the year and he was going to be all NBA and all these crazy things. And so far he's done all of them.
Richard Jefferson told Nuggets fans the exact same thing last year, and that didn't work out quite as well. But I hear you. Let's take a quick break because I think you feel pretty convinced that the Jazz will make the playoffs. We're gonna do the next segment and talk about why they won't make the play. Maybe some of the things that could happen that would cause them not to. We'll be right back. I'm here with David Locke, host of Locked On Jazz, the radio voice for the Utah Jazz. Let's take a look now. Why do you think, what are some things that could happen? And maybe it has to be some big things. Injuries aside, we'll talk about that at the end, but what are some things that could happen to this team to make them underperform and maybe even slip out of the playoffs?
I think if there's some, so the two things would be if something's happened in the league that changes the way people are playing offensively, that somehow the Jazz aren't the defensive force. I don't know what that is. Like, so if you kind of, we talked about this on the Real GM podcast. The one thing I think's really kind of been misreported in the inner workings of the NBA this year is that because the Rockets and Warriors switched everything in the playoffs, everyone talked about switching. And the real truth of the matter is that the best defensive teams were all drop big teams.
Yeah.
And the Jazz were one of them. So the second best defense in the league, the third best defense in the league, the fourth best defense, the fifth best defense, the seventh best defense, and the eighth best defense in the league were all drop big teams. The Jazz are one of them. If something has somehow somebody teams are able to have, you know, like Adam, like coaches sit, at least Jazz coaches, in like 3 hour film sessions analyzing how to attack dropping bigs.
Right.
Like, these guys are amazing. So if something's happened in the league, it's why Tom Thibodeau's like not a good defensive coach anymore, because people figured out how to attack ice.
Do you think, but I mean, this playoffs was, I think, a real, not eye opener, but it really did feel like a bit of a stylistic shift. And the playoffs are always the real testing ground for the new ideas, because that's success at the highest level. But, you know, this playoffs was different than I think all the other ones because of the switching. And we've talked about this a bit. I think dropping bigs is easier to do. I think, you know, if you have a rim protecting big, it's very easy. You don't have to, you know, change a whole lot. But do you think there'll be more teams that do try to either attack that defense differently, or you know, or teams that try to change up their defensive strategy a little bit more than they otherwise would have?
So two thoughts. Great question. One is, I think that teams are going to switch because they saw it in the playoffs, and I think they're going to make an ass of themselves.
Yeah.
Like, I think the reason the Warriors and the Rockets can switch is because they have Clint Capella and Draymond Green.
Yeah, of course.
And it reminds me of 2 years ago when everyone tried to be the Warriors. And
yeah.
Everyone made a fool of themselves. Washington under Randy Whitman changed entirely how they were playing and tried to play fast. And everyone was just throwing the ball all over the gym, trying to play fast. It wasn't that the Warriors were playing fast. It was they had two or three of the best shooters in the NBA. And so they could play a different way, and everyone tried to emulate the Warriors. So from a Jazz standpoint, frankly, if everyone decides they want to switch everything, I think it might solve their problem, which is that they're not a great offensive team, and that suddenly I think people will be making enough mistakes that they'll be good offensively. So I think that the switching with an offseason of preparation, I think coaches will be pretty good on how to attack switching better than simply getting into isolation. But it's really hard. I think you know, during the Rockets playoff series, Quinn Snyder made a fascinating comment to me, because the Jazz are the number one team in the league in picks off-ball picks, right?
Yeah.
So the Jazz set like 20 more picks than any team in the league. Against the Rockets, we weren't setting any.
I wonder how much of that has to do with their great defense, too. And I know that sounds silly, but when you have to fight through four screens on one end of the court, I just feel like in basketball, we know this from playing. I know these guys are well-conditioned athletes, but you know, your breathing does go in rhythms. And if you expend a lot in a 10-second stretch, sometimes it takes 7 seconds to catch your breath and to get back. And I wonder how much of their clunky offense, you still have to go through four or five picks and then go down and execute your offense on the other end. I wonder if that helps a little bit.
And there's a big guy in the middle who's a pain in the ass to deal with, so you might as well jack that shot early because it's easier. No,
oh, yeah.
I think that – and the Jazz are playing slow and you want to pick up tempo. No, I absolutely 100%. I think there's a time of possession almost like you're playing the smash-mouth football team. I think there's a huge part of playing the Jazz that it's unpleasant. The same way that playing the Nuggets is unpleasant because they're running you up and down the court at a high altitude. The Jazz are at an altitude and they're grabbing. And like, who on the Jazz do you want to be guarded by?
Right. No, that's one of the things we've talked about. They have every single. They don't have a player that you plug him in and you go, oh man, we got to cover for him on the defensive end. Offensively, there's question marks, but defensively, everybody in the rotation's good.
And I think I brought this up on Real GM as an idea, and I thought you guys did not like it. But I still think it's an interesting concept and I don't know if the Jazz should do this, but I think it's an interesting idea. So you play a drop big for 32 minutes a night with Gobert, and the other 16 minutes a night you switch 1 through 5.
Identity is such a hard thing, and I think we see this even with this Nuggets team. When guys have to bounce back and forth between styles, roles, and stuff like that, I just think that makes difficult calculations. So I would be skeptical of a team being able to do that. But if there were teams, there are some teams you feel less skeptical about, and Utah's one of them, in part because I think they're a very disciplined team. I think that's like one of the identities of them under Quinn Snyder. So if there is a team that can pull off that type of now we're doing this, now we're doing that, I think Utah's one of them.
It'd be from a regular season standpoint, I think it would make it impossible to prepare for them.
Yeah, 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 definitely flexible. Let me just ask you then. Actually, I want to ask the injury question because I know you can never predict these, but is there a player or players on the roster who, if they missed 30 games, the team would not make the playoffs?
Well, the answer to that's Rudy, and he missed 30 games last year and they made the playoffs.
That's why I put that 30 mark in there.
But I think that it's still Rudy. I think if Rudy misses 30 games this year, I think it took something really remarkable to make the playoffs last year. So, I you know, you can't. Donovan and Rudy are the two best players on this team.
I wondered about Mitchell, and part of that is just because of the scoring, and I wonder if his scoring is more important than, because they have, like we said, 10 great defenders. So if you, even if you lose your best defender, you still have a good defensive team. But without Donovan Mitchell, I don't think this team would hold everybody to 90 points and still lose.
Yeah, Rudy's really great. Yeah. You know, I think everyone knows that I'm on this, like, but Rudy's really great. Like, he's really great. Like, it's crazy. I don't think people get it, right? And like the same way that you feel about Jokic, watching him every day, that generally people don't get it.
Yeah.
Jokic, it's easier to get from afar because there's actually tangible numbers to explain it. Like Rudy's, the defensive rating with Rudy on the floor last year was a 97.7.
Yeah. That's a huge
97.7.
What is that?
That's
below? What's league average?
Below,
yeah,
10
points.
10.
Okay, there you go.
107.
Yeah.
Like that. So that's the equivalent. Let me see if I can explain that. This is why I'm on my – and if you listen to Locked On NBA today, Ben Golliver joins me. And or maybe it's – I don't know when you're posting this. But so Locked On NBA on the Thursday, September 13th edition is Ben Golliver. And I think Rudy should be a top 10 player in the league. And one of my major points, and I don't really say it in there, is that there's nobody in the league that has 117 offensive rating.
Yeah. I think when people do this, and I hate player ranking, people get so upset and so emotionally invested in them. I've always said that player rankings actually inherently don't make sense. It'd be like ranking spices or you know, ranking ingredients for food. It depends on what you're cooking, the value of the ingredient. But for guys like Rudy, and I think also for Nikola, everybody wants a top 10 guy to be a guy you give the ball to and isolate on the wing at the end of a game. Like that just, for whatever reason, that seems like people have that as a prerequisite for a top 10 player. And if you don't do that, the best you can be is a top 20 player. And I don't know that that makes sense. The last 2 minutes of a game are extremely important, but I don't know that they're that much more important than the first 36. And I think they get weighed sometimes unfairly, especially for bigs. To wrap up this, how many games do you think Utah's going to win this year?
By the way, I just want to point out one thing just because I think it's so stunning when I've on that discussion. Do you know what Steph Curry's offensive rating was last year?
No.
120.
Yeah. This will be a hot take. I think Jokic might be there this year. And in part, it's because Denver got worse defensively but better offensively. This might be Jokic's best season that he'll have in his career just in terms of his own individual like offensive brilliance, because the team is, I don't know that he'll ever be on a team that's so all in on offense like they are with this Nuggets team. So I think he might flirt with something like that this year. Go ahead.
I think the Wilson Chandler departure is really good for the team. So I think you probably got something there.
Oh, absolutely. How many games you got Utah winning?
55.
What seed does that get them?
Second or third, depending on what happens with Houston.
Yeah. I kind of think they might be the two seed this year. I could see it. And 55 wins, I think that almost, it's not conservative by any means, but I would not be shocked by them going, just having a phenomenal year. And because if offense comes easy to you or defense comes easy to you, you just get a lot of wins. And defense comes so easy to Utah. I just think they're going to lock up every team every night, and they'll be in just so many games just because of that.
Yeah, I mean, a lot's going to happen, right? Defense is an effort and a communication and a chemistry thing. They have it right now. Everyone comes back maybe with a different mindset. Who knows?
Have they ever not had it in the Quinn Snyder era, though? I mean, they always seem to bring that defensive intensity. That just, some coaches, that just, their teams always do that.
Quinn's really good, like stunningly good.
Yeah.
And the players, there's a great book called Culture Code that I just read this summer. And the players know how good Quinn is, so they know that they're being led into battle with an edge, and I think that that's a huge part for them.
Yeah, I like that a lot. So he's a homer for the Jazz, and he's a hater for the Nuggets. We're going to take a quick break, and then when we come back, we're going to hear his thoughts on the Nuggets and what... Just get an outside perspective on what he sees as some of their weaknesses. We'll be right back. Wrapping up here with David Locke, host of Locked On Jazz, and let's take a look at the Nuggets now. Utah, I think we both agree that Utah is a top three seed, you know, all things being equal, all injuries and things like that being equal. I think they're one of the three best teams in the West. Denver, the takes on Denver are all across the board. Some teams have them as a top three or four seed. Some people have them out of the playoffs. Just off the top, where do you think Denver finishes this year? How high or low are you on them right now?
So honestly, my project this weekend is to run my numbers, and my numbers are not probably as good as Kevin Pelton's and some other people's, but they're kind of what I base everything on, and I have not done it yet. But I think Denver will come out really, really positive. My numbers are predominantly offensive numbers, yeah. And so Denver should come through the roof on that. You know, Isaiah Thomas is really hard to figure out what you're trying to say he is. You know, if I take Isaiah Thomas of 2 years ago, I think you'll come out as the number one offense in the league. Right. And if I take Isaiah Thomas of last year, you'll be down a little bit, and it's probably smart to take him somewhere in between. But my offensive metrics really like the team and didn't like Wilson Chandler, right? So the only players that were negative on your team last year were Kenneth Faried, Richard Jefferson, Paul Millsap, Wilson Chandler, Juan Herman Gomez, and Malik Beasley. Well, most of those guys, other than Millsap, and Millsap hopefully will be a little bit better than he was last year, you could have a roster of entirely positive offensive players. And if you have that, that's actually the makeup of, like, that's the makeup. Like, that's championship caliber team. Now the question gets to be, like, what are you defensively? And if you're 28th in the league defensively again, that you just can't survive that way. It's just like, go look at the history of the game and go run the bottom four defensive teams in the league, and there's just a limit on how many games you can win. So, you know, a huge question for me is, when I do my numbers, is there anything to make me believe that the Nuggets are not going to be 26th in the league or 24th in the, what were they last year, 26th in the league defensively again? And that's what it,
well, where do you come down?
Just
eye test, not even looking at the numbers, just eye test, or, you know, just going off your gut. Do you think that Denver improves or at all defensively, goes back? And the big key here is, you know, Paul Millsap played 16 games healthy. And when he was on the, not even when he was on the court, just when he was healthy, Denver defensively was significantly better. And a lot of that was because you just have a good defender on the court for 32 minutes, whether it's with the starters, the bench, or whatever. So do you, but then you add Isaiah Thomas, who obviously is an anchor defensively. What do you think that they're going to be better than 26? And I'll be honest, I think they will be. I think they could be 22nd, which is kind of an important, you know, a big improvement.
Yeah, man, that's the jump Minnesota made last year, right? That Minnesota took that. I don't. But I could be wrong. I don't, not, that was said with very little conviction.
Yeah.
So I don't, and I'm worried, and I was worried last year as well on Millsap's, age and wear and tear.
Yeah.
And my logic there, just to explain it, 'cause I think Paul's great and Paul's stunned me at every step of his career, is that, and I think I've said this to you before, if I took the name off of his numbers, I'd be really concerned. Now, you tell me it's Paul Millsap, and I decide I'm not concerned. But that's how you usually make a mistake, right, in your analysis. So what I mean by that is, if you look at Millsap's field goal percentage or percentage of shots at the rim, they've gone from 38% to 36% to 25% of his shots to 20% of his shots at the rim in the last 4 years. Like, that's pretty glaring.
I think
that's a bad trend. He's gone from 44 dunks to 40 dunks to 15 dunks to 16 dunks. Like, those are issues that say that one of the great fighters in the game is now 33 years old and maybe not as undersized as he once was, but that's concerning.
For me, I think you're right with some of that. The reason it doesn't really concern me as much is I just think his role, the league has evolved in that time, and I think his role has evolved, especially here in Denver. And a player it kind of reminds me of is Kenyon Martin, who was averaging 17 points a game in New Jersey. Denver signs him to that giant max contract, and he starts averaging, 1 year, he averaged 9 points a game, 11 points a game. And a lot of that was just because when he came here, he was the defensive guy. And he was a guy that I think could have done more offensively, just as I think Millsap can do more offensively. But his best role for Denver is just to emphasize that part of his game. And last year, I think he was actually not just good. I thought he was really, really good defensively. He was My eyes were glued to him defensively whenever he was on the court because of how many different things he did. So for me, the offensive, I'm just not worried about Denver's offensive production. Whether he's dunking and getting to the rim, to me it makes almost no difference. For me, the entire difference for him is what he does defensively.
And, you know, he's Paul's overcome at every step in his career. I guess I'll just hold. Like,
yeah.
If you look at his numbers and their decline and his age, any other player in the league, you give me these same numbers on Wilson Chandler and tell me he's 33, and I'm like, oh, dear God.
Right.
You give me these numbers on, I don't know, like Rondae Hollis Jefferson 5 years. I don't know why I chose him. But, you know, 10 years from now. And
yeah,
I'm
he's
like,
younger,
oh,
yeah.
Right? Like, oh, no. Like, right? Any player in the league. But Paul's got 4 All-Star games and a defensive player, you know, all defensive team, and he's got all these accolades. And so, but the fact is that every player in the history of the game has aged.
The only thing I'll say is defensively, I just thought last year he looked as good as ever. But, you know, we'll find out in real time this year because I think right away we're going to know about Denver if their defense is worth anything. Who's the X factor for the Nuggets? The guy that plays well is going to raise their ceiling. If it plays poorly, he's going to lower it.
It's hard to raise your ceiling offensively. I'm still a Trey Lyles fan, skill-wise.
Yeah.
So I think there's something to be said there.
I know this time of year everybody's in the best shape of their life, but I have heard from multiple people that he's a guy that looks, just physically looks, really, really good.
He's just going to have to figure out if he wants to be a teammate.
Mm.
Like, he has not figured that out yet.
Mm.
And that's not unusual for Kentucky guys. I think, you know, the move of Emmanuel Mudiay for you is very similar to the Rodney Hood, Joe Johnson move of the Jazz, right? Like,
this is why when people say earlier, you said if you get the Isaiah Thomas from the Lakers, you know, that's not a good thing. And I think, man, it's not a good thing, but it's better what they had.
No, I think I think that's very true. It's a great question. I mean, Jamal Murray should take another step, shouldn't he?
He's definitely one of the big ones for me. I mean, I still don't feel like I know what if whether he's a high ceiling guy or like a good useful role player guy. I still don't know that.
I mean, this team's really loaded.
Yeah, with offensive talent. Just the same way Utah's loaded with defensive talent. Denver just has offensive guys up and down the roster. Even guys that are like Juancho Hernangómez might not play. Every time he's on the court, Denver's offense is incredible.
It's real, and I'm a huge Gary Harris fan, as you know.
Yeah. Yeah, he seems like a Utah guy. How do you feel Utah matches up with Denver in a playoff series? There's a chance, though, they find each other in the playoffs.
Good chance, right? Very, yeah. Very good chance. 4-5, 3-6, yeah. With either team being on either side of that.
Yeah.
I like Utah in that setting, only just because things slow down a little bit and you just – that defensive presence, I think we saw that a little bit last year against the Thunder.
Yeah.
That you lose those, you lose some of those baskets, and it just makes things awfully tough.
Yeah, I'm kind of torn on that one. I think
Jokic Gobert would be fun though.
Yeah, I actually like Jokic against Gobert. I think he's one of the guys that draws Gobert out of his comfort zone defensively and mitigates some of that. So. I don't know. Obviously, I think Utah's the better team and going to get more wins. I have them as a 2 or 3 seed. I think Denver 6, 7, 8, 9. But I don't know that it's a slaughter. It could be a slaughter, but I don't know.
No, I don't think so. I don't think it's a slaughter at all. It's really interesting because the altitude doesn't affect either team, which is really a huge, interesting aspect.
For me personally, it'd be great. That's a cheap flight. It's only an hour flight, so covering those games would not be too bad.
You got me now. Now I'm about to go do a research project on bigs in their 13th season. Or I could even do wings in their 13th season. I wonder if I'm wrong on Paul, but it just feels that. I'm probably wrong on Paul because everybody's been wrong on Paul every single day of his life.
Yeah, that just seems like they're. I mean, Taj Gibson's still out there defending. He's around the same age, still doing a lot of things. I think when guys in their older years, they have to become. Well, let me. I just want to get this point out. I want to get this point out. When the more you can narrowly focus a player, like, you know, Paul's an all around guy. That's kind of what made him so good. He could pass, shoot, defend, all this stuff. I think with Denver, he just needs to defend. He just needs to put all that energy into one end of the court.
So let's get two things straight. If he gives you Taj Gibson, that's a problem. And two, Paul's not interested in doing that.
Yeah, that's interesting. Man, that's really interesting. last one here, because we do got to wrap up here. How many games do you think Denver wins this year?
A lot.
Well, you had 55 for Utah. That's a lot.
Sorry, excuse me. Well, really just, I mean, if you're fourth best offensive team in the league and you're 24th defensive team in the league, then you're probably winning 48. And if you get to about 20th defensively, you're winning about 52.
I think that's the exact way I would put it. I think that they're going to be a top 4 or 5 offense, and then defensively they're going to finish anywhere from like upside 18th, downside 26th, 27th, likely somewhere right in the between there, 23rd, 24th. And that's why I think I'm at 48 at the moment. I said 47 2-3 weeks ago on Dunked On's podcast, but I think I'm up to 48 now, because I think it'll land somewhere right there. So I think that's right. And where is that in the playoff race for you?
Oh, geez. I'm not totally sold on the Lakers. Pelton's kind of got me on that.
Oh, man. I'm still sold. I still see them in.
Oh, I'm not sure I have, you know, like, so they're 48.5, and I think I took them as under.
Yeah, I see you.
Thunder at 50.5, and I have them at over. The Russell knee injury is troublesome.
Yeah. Could become a storyline.
I have not run my numbers, so if I can, you know, I'll run them and let you know.
Yeah. These are all preliminary guesses. That's what I tell people when they're like, how did you have that number? I said, man, we're 3 weeks from training camp. Let's just, my numbers will change.
So, like, I'll give you an example. Like, let me just, like, I really totally based my offensive numbers have to come out for me to make my opinion. And I just haven't had a chance to do it. And I remember last year, like, I had said all these things on these shows, and then I ran my numbers and Houston's offense came out the exact same as the Warriors. Mm. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, it was stunning. Like, I reran the numbers like 5 times. And I might have that experience with Denver or somebody else. The team that I think I like, that I think my numbers are going to like, and it sounds so stupid to like not know what your numbers are going to say, but I guess that's the point of them. Is I really think I like New Orleans.
Yeah, I thought that's where you're going to go with this. I might be with you on that. I think I'm actually with you on that.
Though, we'll see. I mean, they were better without DeMarcus Cousins, but DeMarcus actually had one of the best years he's ever had. He was really a much better player last year than he's been before.
Yeah.
But Julius Randle will pick up all of that slack. And I know this is crazy. I'm not convinced that Elfrid Payton is a big step down from Rajon Rondo.
Man, I've been saying this. I think Elfrid Payton is going to have a good year. I don't know that he's a great player, but I just don't. People are a lot of when you get to why people are discounting New Orleans, he's reason number one. And I just don't know about that. And then on top of that, look, Anthony Davis is better than everybody gives him credit for. He's the classic. You know, he's the Kevin Garnett. He's the great player that's in this bad organization for all these years. It almost disguises how great this guy is. And I do think he has players now, still not perfect is what's crazy, but he has players now that certainly complement his skill set more so than before. My question with them is they have two main pieces, Drew Holiday and Anthony Davis, both have missed a lot of time to injury. And I don't think it's a coincidence. So they're maybe a little bit more of an injury risk than most teams.
Yeah, I don't look at that because I don't know. I don't know how to equate for that. There's been no good research on injury, and I think their bench players are far better than people realize. So Darius Miller is far better than people realize. Etwan Moore is better than people realize.
Don't know anything about Darius Miller. Not a big Etwan Moore fan though.
He's pretty good. He shot 43% from three last year.
I mean, that's all he's going to have.
Took 31% of his shots from three. I think he's good.
Yeah.
I mean, Mirotić is pretty good.
So are they better than Denver?
No, I don't think so.
So it sounds like you might have Denver sixth seed somewhere in there.
The one thing we're not talking about is we're thinking about Minnesota differently because Jimmy Butler got hurt last year.
Right.
They were the third seed in the Western Conference before that injury.
Yeah.
But I do feel like they're going to fall apart. Like, can you have a worse offseason without anything going wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. That would really help, I think, all these teams in the West. They need one team. All these Western Conference teams need one team to fall apart towards the top. And Minnesota, I think, leading candidate for sure.
Yeah, but nobody talks. So is your comment on Anthony Davis? My comment is Carl Anthony Towns was the fourth best offensive player in the NBA last year behind Steph, Durant, and Harden.
Yeah, yeah, he's
pretty great. He's insanely dominant as an offensive player, and I don't think we're taking that in well enough. I mean, particularly considering he has to cover up for Andrew Wiggins.
Right. My thing with them is I think in a different situation, I think people would catch on to that a little bit better. It's almost some of his brilliance is almost boring in part because of how Minnesota plays, but
losing Jamal Crawford's a positive for them.
Yeah.
That helps them out a little bit. They're really good. Bielitsa hurts them a little bit. I don't know that I think Anthony Tolliver's, but he had a great year last year. Maybe Anthony Tolliver's a step up in the right direction. We probably should be giving Minnesota. And I think, you know what? So, like, in regards to the conversation that we're having, yeah, Anthony Tolliver was great last year. Minnesota's going to peek out of my numbers, by the way. Anthony Tolliver shot 44% from three last year. Was a 1.4 pack player, which is really high.
He's a very, very good role player, in my opinion.
Yeah. I actually think that Minnesota's ahead of Denver, and they're going to show up ahead of Denver in both offensively and defensively in my numbers.
Yeah. So that would put Denver, I think, at sixth if I'm just going. Lakers, Nuggets, 6-7, so however you sort that. And then New Orleans sounds like just maybe slightly below, which makes sense, which means, David, we're in for a Nuggets-Utah playoff series, as we talked about at the top here. So then we might have that to look forward to, a Rocky Mountain showdown.
I found an unbelievable Pan-Asian restaurant downtown last year. That's one of my faves. I love Little Owl Coffee Shop. I have a lifelong friend who lives there, and there's a new hot restaurant that's on my list in Denver. So that sounds fine to me.
Perfect. Well, I guess we'll see you in April. We'll just book it now. Thanks everybody.
By the way, Jazz lose both games in Denver this year. Both games are on back ends of back to back.
Perfect. Hopefully it happens again. Thanks so much for joining me, David. It should be a good time. And everybody, I'll be back again all week and next with brand new episodes with this series, talking about all the other teams in the hunt for the playoffs. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see everybody next time.
Thanks for listening to the Locked On Nuggets podcast. Be sure to subscribe on iTunes and visit us on the web at denverstiffs.com.